Blog Talk Radio.
To present to you Cab Calloway.
Droning a drowsy syncopated tune. Rocking back and forth to a mellow croon. I heard a Negro play. Down on Lenox Avenue the other night, by the pale, dull pallor of an old gaslight, he did a lazy sway. He did a lazy sway to the tune of those weary blues. With his ebony hands on each ivory key, he made that poor piano moan with melody. Oh, blues. Swaying to and fro on his rickety stool, he played that sad, raggy tune like a musical fool. Sweet blues coming from a black man's soul. Oh, blues. In a deep song voice with the melancholy tone, I heard that Negro sing that old piano moan. Ain't got nobody in all this world. Ain't got nobody but myself. I's gwine to quit my frownin' and put my troubles on the shelf. Thump, thump, thump went his foot on the floor. He played a few chords, then he sang some more. I got the weary blues, and I can't be satisfied. Got the weary blues, and can't be satisfied. I ain't happy no more, and I wish that I had died. And far into the night, he crooned that tune. The stars went out, and so did the moon. The singer stopped playing and went to bed while the weary blues echoed through his head. He slept like a rock.
Hello and welcome to In Our Craft or Solon Art, where we will discuss and celebrate the written word. My name is Pam Ray. With me is my co-host Jody Melton. Jody and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. And if you find that tonight's show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Jody. How's it going?
Good. How are you tonight, Pam?
Oh, I'm doing great. Looking forward to hanging out with you. You never know, maybe some other cool poets. Delving into some amazing poetry. And,
good. Thanks, it'll be a great night.
I think so. We've got quality poetry. I see we have Puddles 33, a.k.a. Barb, hanging out in Late Night Poets. It's good to see her. So hello there, Barb. And, a little bit about tonight's show. Well, just to get people a heads up, we've separated the rights into groups by what poem they were inspired by. We ran a contest on All Poetry with poems from some of the poets of the Harlem Renaissance era, which I'll talk a little bit about more shortly. But so we're going to be playing the classic poems because this is Black History Month, and we want people to be able to hear some of the voices of Black history. And we won't be necessarily commenting on those, but we will make sure they get played. And then, of course, we'll be playing or reading or playing recordings of our All Poetry poets who wrote for the contest or wrote for the show. So there's going to be a lot of great poetry. What I hope to be interesting discussion. So obviously, you know, there has been throughout history some very talented, very amazing Black authors. And it was really difficult to limit, but I decided that this year we would focus in on the Harlem Renaissance. The poets. The Harlem Renaissance actually was a time period from the 1920s early 1920s to the late 1930s where creative and intellectual life flourished within African American communities in the North and Midwest regions of the United States, but especially in Harlem, New York. And so because of its prevalence in history, because of its importance to the African American creative community and their identity, that I decided to focus my energy or our energy there. It wasn't to dismiss any talent before or after that, but I felt like it was something important to focus on. You know, there's so many different key figures within the Harlem Renaissance poets. Claude McKay, James Weldon Johnson, Langston Hughes, and so many others. Of course, there were women involved: Angelina Wells Grimke, Helene Johnson, Anne Spencer, Margaret Walker. I could just keep going and going, but you know, we'll be coming across some of the names as we go through the show. Interesting fact, I don't know if you knew this, Jody, but the Harlem, New York was originally built as a neighborhood that was meant for rich white people. And for whatever reason, it ended up becoming a cultural center for the African American community. Let's see, what are some other interesting facts about the Harlem Renaissance? Okay, well, the Harlem Renaissance was centered in Harlem, New York, but had a nationwide impact. Some of the most prominent figures of the Harlem Renaissance include Langston Hughes, Zora Neale Hurston, Duke Ellington, and Billie Holiday. The Harlem Renaissance was a time of great intellectual and artistic growth for African Americans. More importantly, besides being an important time of intellectual and spiritual and artistic growth for African Americans, it was also a way to protest against the prejudice and that was going on in the country at that time. It was a movement of Black self-assertion and empowerment, and it paved the way for Black liberation movements of the 1960s and 70s. And it ended in the 1940s because of World War II. While the country was going through economic difficulties, many of the key figures of the Harlem Renaissance actually had to get jobs in war-related industries. So there's a little bit of facts. There's, of course, a lot out there to learn. If you already, know the poets and the artists of the Harlem Renaissance, maybe go refresh yourself on them. If it has been a while, if you haven't read them, please go check them out. I actually have supplied on the contest page a link for some more information. So there's a bit for people to know. And Jody, was there anything you wanted to say or add in?
I'm excited. I think it's going to be some great poetry tonight. The Harlem Renaissance poets, they played a crucial role in shaping American literature and culture. Their works, they broke down racial barriers, it really elevated the art of poetry. I'm excited to read and hear them read.
Me too. And you're right. It really did help to break down racial barriers. So very cool. All right. So whenever you're ready, if you want to go ahead and put that first poem up.
I already got it up, Pam.
Oh, I see it. Okay.
Right above, I put it up a little early.
But that's okay. That's all right. Very cool. So, all right. So this first poem, nobody actually wrote to it, but I just feel like it's such an important poem that it needs to be heard. So I'm going to go ahead and give this one a read, and it's For My People by Margaret Walker. For my people everywhere singing their slave songs, repeatedly their dirges and their ditties and their blues and jubilees, praying their prayers nightly to an unknown God, bending their knees humbly to an unseen power. For my people lending their strength to the years, to the gone years and the now years and the maybe years, washing, ironing, cooking, scrubbing, sewing, mending, hoeing, plowing, digging, planting, pruning, patching, dragging along, never gaining, never reaping, never knowing, and never understanding. For my playmates in the clay and dust of sand of Alabama backyards, playing, baptizing, and preaching, and doctor, and jail, and soldier, and school, and mama, and cooking, and playhouse, and concert, and store, and hair, and Miss Chumbi and company. For the cramped, bewildered years we went to school to learn to know the reason why and the answers to, and the people who, and the places where, and the days when, in memory of the bitter hours when we discovered we were Black and poor and small and different, and nobody cared and nobody wondered and nobody understood. For the boys and girls who grew in spite of these things to be man and woman, to laugh and dance and sing and play and drink their wine and religion and success, to marry their playmates and bear children and then die of consumption and anemia and lynching for my people thronging 47th Street and Lenox Avenue in New York and Rampart Street in New Orleans, lost, disinherited, dispossessed, and happy people filling the cabarets and taverns and other people's pockets and needing bread and shoes and milk and land and money and something, something all our own. For my people walking blindly, spreading joy, losing time, being lazy, sleeping when hungry, shouting when burdened, drinking when hopeless, tired and shackled, and tangled among ourselves by the unseen creatures who tower over us omnisciently and laugh. For my people, blundering and groping and floundering in the dark of churches and schools and clubs and societies, associations and councils and committees and conventions, distressed and disturbed and deceived and devoured by money-hungry, glory-craving leeches, preyed on by facile force of state and fad and novelty by false prophets and holy believer. For my people staring, trying to fashion a better way from confusion, from hypocrisy and misunderstanding, trying to fashion a world that will hold all the people, all the faces, all the Adams and Eves and their countless generations. Let a new earth rise. Let another world be born. Let a bloody peace be written in the sky. Let a second generation full of courage issue forth. Let a people loving freedom come to growth. Let a beauty full of healing and a strength of final clenching be the pulsing in our spirits and our blood. Let the marital songs be written. Let the dirges disappear. Let a race of men now rise and take control. End poem. And I just couldn't pass up that poem being read, even though nobody wrote to it. You know, it's just such a powerful rite that, you know, while obviously I don't have that firsthand experience, I imagine speaks amazingly for the Black heritage, for the culture, you know, for that time period, the difficulties they were going through, the sense that needing of sense of self-identity, you know. And I know we said we weren't going to comment on the classic poems, which for the most part we won't, because, you know, we want to get through, you know, as much poetry as possible. But I will ask you, Jody, what you thought of this classic poem by Margaret Walker.
Yeah, that was a powerful poem. That was beautifully and passionately expressed, you know, the struggle, the resilience, the aspirations of the African Americans throughout history. Wow, her words, you know, they called for a new era of hope, unity, empowerment, you know, where a generation full of courage can lead the way, you know, toward a brighter future. I thought that was impressive. I'm sure that was very well received back in the day when she came out with that one, for sure.
Absolutely. Oh, and also, just to give people a heads up, we will most likely have some carryovers, but they are going to go on the show that starts a half hour after this one ends. So just to give people that heads up. Yep. But don't worry. You can go to bed if you need to. I should have Rex. I mean, of course, you're welcome to join us, but I also know you get up pretty early for work, so,
yeah,
you know.
No, I don't know. I'll probably stay up for a little while. I'd like to hear some more of that, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so.
All right. So what do we got coming up next?
Next, we got Subway Wind. That'll be the first classic poem we put up today.
It is, yes. And Subway Wind by Claude McKay.
Claude McKay, yes.
Yep, and we do have a recording of that, so here we go.
Subway Wind by Claude McKay. Far down, down through the city's great gaunt cut, the gray train rushing bears the weary wind. The packed cars, the fans, the crowd's breath cut, leaving the sick and heavy air behind. And pale-cheeked children seek the upper door to give their summer jackets to the breeze. Their laugh is swallowed in the deafening roar of captive wind that moans for fields and seas. Seas, cooling warm where native schooners drift through sleepy waters, while gulls wheel and sweep, waiting for windy waves the keels to lift lightly among the islands of the deep. Islands of lofty palm trees blooming white that lend their perfume to the tropic sea, where fields lie idle in the dew-drenched night, and the trades float above them, fresh and free.
That was such an amazing read of that poem. Just a powerful write. All right, so what's the first write we have inspired by that poem?
The first one we have is by Postwoman. Tea leaves seem like a good present, but the packaging matters. Sam's, you want to give that a read?
Sure. Oh, I'm sorry, did you say, do I want to give that a read?
Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. I'd be happy to do that. All right, Tea Leaves Seem Like a Good Present, But the Packaging Matters by Postwoman. We would have loved Catahoulk, given how much we love to stay under roofs of stars and the tiles and clouds that move to and fro, and we move with them without moving at all. And we would have then had favorite ladders to climb onto our house, and returning home would be recreational besides habitual, and we could even have separate ceiling doors reserved only for stars and each other. How much more beautiful homecoming would be. I love how we look out for each other with the fervor of old civilizations, with the romanticism of their overnight disappearance, with the sorrow of their gradual decay, with the confusion of their gods, who too became ancient excavations. I wish for us to be the faith that was unearthed thousands and thousands of years after, the vitality of life that disappears but doesn't quite quietly die, the whispers to a river that flows by, a sea that carries a cargo ship, an island that becomes a newspaper snippet. Not sure when winter is going to say goodbye. I still hear the train cut through my afternoon siesta on a lazy day and sit up again from the dream of us forgetting our luggage in a small station where the engine barely rumbles. Haven't completed the dream yet. Not sure we will get our things back, particularly my blue trolley bag. I mean, your blue trolley bag. May I be your favorite speck of cloud? And the line your favorite song is missing, but that which is on your mind despite business hour boredom. And she wrote to prompts 2, 3, and 7. And I just kind of chose to put it with what was the prompt 2 of the contest, Subway Wind, but it definitely could have worked with any one of those those poems. She put that, and I forgive me, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right. I probably should have looked it up, but that Catahoulouc features a unique streetless settlement of houses clustered back to back with roof access into the buildings. So learn something new. And of course, I'll be commenting more, but I'd like to hear your thoughts, Jody.
Yeah, I thought, you know, she beautifully captured the essence of longing and connection in this one. Yeah, weave together the imagery of homecoming, the resilience of civilizations, and the ephemeral nature of life. I love that metaphor, your favorite speck of cloud. I thought it added a touch of intimacy to the poem. Yeah, it's a very nice piece. Very well done.
Oh, I have to agree. And yeah, those end lines were absolutely beautiful. And you're right, they did add that nice touch of intimacy. There really is such a beautiful sense of longing within this, the idea of what could have been, you know, and all that disappears. I like that she used that town, that colony or whatever it is, that where all the houses are put together and you have to go out on the roof to go in and out of the buildings. I thought that made for such a great metaphor for the idea of being both closer to other people and closer to the heavens. I like how it kind of goes into that personal moments, especially with lines like forgetting our luggage in a small station where the engine barely rumbles, and then where it says, not sure we will get our things back, particularly my blue trolley bag. I mean, your blue trolley bag. It makes me think of the idea when you're going through a separation or a divorce and you're splitting your stuff, and the things that used to be ours suddenly either becomes yours or mine. And I think that the simplicity in those lines really speaks with a profound sadness. So just an amazing write by Postwoman, and very well done. All right, Jody, what do we got next?
All right, so let's see. Next is going to be poem by, let's see, what is that? I hadn't lost it. Give me 1 second. Okay, here we go. Drifting at the Sea by Betty Page. Let me get that put up here real quick. And there we go. All right. I'll go ahead and read this one. You seem like you've been reading all of them so far. But, okay, here we go. Drifting at Sea. Creamy white seafoam. Bubbles swirl, tumbling to shore. Waves crash vividly. I'm drifting at sea. Swaying neath tall green palm trees. Sipping tiki drinks. Escaping madness. Neon rainbow lights. Dimmer. City streets glamour. Rock candies, diamonds. Glitzy chic designer's trends. Dressed down boulevards. Seductively sings, snapping fingers to the beats, melodically high. Exotic swinging, sweet Tropicana moonlight, juicy pineapples. Passion fruit lip gloss, slippery lickable lips, embracing passions. Sweet pink strawberry champagne, romance overflows. Dreamily drifting, winding down, exploring caves, erotic nightlife. Sapphire starlight. Deep alluring enchantment, dancing neath bright stars. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Jody, and such a beautiful write by Betty Page. I really enjoy and appreciate the sense of movement that she has put into these 5-7-5 lines. Sorry. Another thing I like about this is because I see Subway Wind, the poem by Claude McKay, as him speaking about the culture and the people that he lived around. I feel that because Betty lives on the West Coast and she lives near the ocean, I feel like this is speaking on her environment, on her culture, of the things that she enjoys and longs for. I really like how she brings things to life with Rock Candy's Diamonds, Glitzy Chic, Designer's Trends, Struts Down Boulevard, Seductively Sing, Snapping Fingers to the Beat, Melodically High, and then Embracing Passion, Sweet Pink, Strawberry Champagne, Romance Overflows. I think this speaks on people who enjoy the grand pleasures of life, who want to taste all of life and what it has to offer. So wonderful, right, Betty? Thank you for sharing it with us. And Jody, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought she did a great job taking the reader on a vivid journey through various scenes and emotions with the way she worded everything. She captured the essence of relaxation, you know, escape, and sensuality. Great imagery and sensory details in this one. I thought she had a rhythmic flow, you know, added to the charm of it, making it a very enjoyable read. Very well done.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know about you, but it makes me want to head off to the West Coast and have champagne and strawberries.
So, yeah, I definitely would love to do that one day. I've never been that far.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Colorado's absolutely a beautiful state. We used to, as a family, it is, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Pikes Peak and just, the Colorado Mountains is just stunning.
Yeah. All right.
But,
yeah,
I like what you. What's that?
I come back home and I was just bored with the landscape. Like, man, where's all the mountains?
Right, right.
Everywhere you go, there's mountains.
Yep. Yeah. I know the flatter states. You know, like Ohio, Indiana, Idaho. Those ones. You know, you kind of just drive by and see nothing but miles of wheat and corn fields. So,
right.
Yep. But I liked what you had to say. I do agree that this was definitely, you know, a treat for the sensory. So very cool. And what do we got next, Jody?
All right. So next we have Subway Win 2024 by Guilty. And if you want, I can read that one. I think it's a
Go ahead and read it. Absolutely. Subway Win 2024 by Guilty. A ghastly smell upends your nose. The double doors begin to close. Your stomach clenches. What do you suppose? Befouls the air. Funky toes. Barefoot person last shower? Who knows? Projectile vomit? Uh-oh, there he blows. Crowd scatters, look at them go, ass to ass, cheek to cheek, bent elbows, hoping to escape. There is nowhere to go. Underground Subway is a captive animal show. End poem. And Jody, your thoughts?
I thought that was pretty cool. I wrote the subway once, and I thought, you know, this poem captured that, you know, experience of riding the subway in 2024. You know, had a mix of unsettling sense and close quarters. The imagery, I thought, created a palpable sense of discomfort, you know, for the reader. Made you feel like you was right there in the underground world of the subway, really. Pretty cool. I did a good job with that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He really did bring it into modern times and paint such a visceral imagery of what I imagine. And, you know, like I've never ridden a subway either. I've ridden city buses. I rode the Greyhound bus from New York or from Wisconsin to New York and then back. And I rode the L train in Chicago, but I've never actually been on a subway. But I imagine from what I've read, from what I've heard and, you know, seen, that this is a very vivid and description of the ugliness that you can see within such crowded areas. But, you know, I find that to be true. Like, you know, like you've got those trains in India where, you know, a lot of people, they get overcrowded, you know, buses, subways, even communities where people start feeling too closed in. I know as a claustrophobic person myself, I don't always react very well if I feel like I'm being closed in. And so, you know, you can just imagine being stuck within this filth, this stench, and feeling like a captive. You know, and I think that's where that end line is especially powerful. Underground subway is a captive animal show. You know, just it not only speaks on the subway itself, on the idea that people can feel held captive by their circumstances. So amazing write and very well done. Yeah, and Barb says, makes me glad there are no subways anywhere I have ever lived. Amen to that. And what were you going to say, Jody?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I can imagine I have to do that every day, back and forth to work, commuting. That'd be rough. You'd probably get every sickness that was in the area.
Right, exactly, yeah. Yeah, that is so true. Yeah, no, I remember when we got to the Greyhound bus terminal in New York, and right inside the terminal there were pigeons walking around. And I'm pretty much used to seeing, you know, either pets or animals outside. Like, you know, we have bears, deer, you know, foxes, those kind of thing you'll see. But to see, like, pigeons just walking around in a bus terminal, and no one paid them any mind. Me and my kids were more interested in them than anybody else was, but I imagine because they were just so used to that, you know. But I digress. All right, Jody, what do we got next?
All right, next we got America's Promise by S. Sharp. And I'll give that a read.
All right.
Okay. America's Promise. Harlem Renaissance. A run of graffiti scribbles the walls, of veins pliable and pressurized. Colors, fine silken collars, stand on steps looking up. Kids in windows. On the curb growing up on words and promises. Feet in the gutter. Listen to lines of poetry. Hard times run like trains across town. In the shadows of liberty's flame, straddling wants and wishes, we throw our 2 cents into the well.
Great read, Jody, and an amazing write by Scott. I was really glad to see that he was inspired. And I don't remember if he actually told me or if I just decided to put this one with Subway Wind because I felt like it fit there. But really, it just in general fits with the theme of the show tonight. But with the line, hard times run like trains across town, I thought, well, that could have easily gone with the poem Hard Time Blues, but it also works with Subway Winds. You know, amazing imagery and metaphors all the way through, a brilliant brevity. The title and the first two lines speak on the idea of that when people migrate to a different place, when they come to America, or in the case of part of what started up the Harlem Renaissance was that in the 1920s or like late 1910s, early 1920s, so many African Americans were migrating to escape the South and go into the more urban, not urban, is that what I'm looking for? Well, the city areas of the Midwest and the North, where there was more opportunity for them. And so I feel like Scott's title and starting with Harlem Renaissance is a way to give a nod towards that idea. And then feet in the gutter, listen to lines of poetry, hard times run like trains across town in the shadow of Liberty's flame. I mean, all the way through, there's amazing lines, but I read those because they make me think about the idea that so oftentimes the most beautiful poetry, the most beautiful and powerful artwork comes to fruition when a people are going through the most challenging and difficult times. So amazing right and very well done. And your thoughts, Jody?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, in a way, you know, poverty can be a blessing because it just gives you the hope. And, you know, through the despair, you just, you know, become so creative. I thought this poem, you know, encapsulated the whole essence of the Harlem Renaissance. Did a very, very good job with that. You know, depiction of graffiti in the kids' windows reflected the era's cultural richness and resilience. I especially like the last lines, you know, straddling wants and wishes, we throw our 2 cents into the well. It was, you know, it's a sense of collective determination and aspiration in that time. It's almost as if he's paying homage to that time period in American history. So, very well done.
You know what? I think you're right. Yeah, it does come across as paying homage to that part of American history. Very cool. Very cool. And I see Puddles is hard at work trying to get people to call in and join us. Much appreciated there. I'm not sure it's going to work, but if it does, you know, well, that would be great. And all right, Jody, what do we got next?
So that was the end of that classic poem, right? So now we'll be going on to the next one, which is, let's see, it's called To the Swimmer. There it is. So by Counting Cooley, I think it is?
Yep.
Okay.
To the Swimmer by Counting Cooley. And we do have an audio for that, so here we go.
To the Swimmer by County Cullen. Now as I watch you, strong of arm and endurance, battling and struggling with the waves that rush against you, ever with invincible strength returning into my heart, grown each day more tranquil and peaceful, comes a fierce longing of mind and soul that will not be appeased until, like you, I breast yon deep and boundless expanse of blue. With an outward stroke of power intense, your mighty arm goes forth, cleaving its way through waters that rise and roll, ever a ceaseless vigil, keeping over the treasures beneath. My heart goes out to you of dauntless courage and spirit indomitable, and though my lips would speak, my spirit forbids me to ask, is your heart as true as your arm?
That was actually, that reading was actually done by a guy who has a YouTube channel called Kurt Reads Poetry. I'm assuming the guy's name is Kurt. I don't know him. I don't know a lot about his YouTube channel other than he seems to have a wide variety of appreciation for poetry. He has a great reading voice from what I can hear. And, you know, I also just in general appreciate anybody who uses a media platform to share the art of poetry. So thank you very much to him for doing that. All right. And what's the first poem we have to go inspired by that poem?
All right. So the first poem we have is actually our only poem we have for this classic poem, and it's by Sandy G. It is titled The Swim. So you want to give that a read, Pam?
Yep, but you actually accidentally posted the classic poem twice.
Did I? Oh.
Yep.
No, it's
yep. Let me make sure
I
didn't
right
post it wrong on the board.
You're right. I did do that twice, but I got that up there now.
Okie dokie. Just had to make sure it wasn't
right.
me steering you wrong. All right. This is The Swim by Sandy G. While watching Life at Seven, I ditched the doggy paddle, dove deep into cold water, and learned the art of swim. Struggling with buoyancy, stroking towards false spring, to pause, I asked not where, the end, I asked not when. Stamina grew beside tenacity. I swam life, eschewing fear. If insistence paid conviction, sunny shorelines were looming near. Waves, once but an annoyance, grew wild as storms blew by. Exhausted, I lost ground, doggy paddled with the tide. Dangers of the deep drowned the stalwart mind. Horizon spanning blue, no ending there to find. Daylight turned to dusk, my strength was running thin. Was there a waiting shoreline, or was it all about the swim? End poem. And what an amazing write by Sandy G. Your thoughts, Jody?
Oh, yeah, I thought she beautifully captured, you know, the journey of life as the metaphorical swim. You know, had youthful enthusiasm and a willingness to dive into the unknown. You know, and then as it progressed, you know, she reflected the growth of strength and determination, you know, emphasizing persistence in life, you know, how it can lead you to brighter horizons. Just, you know, highlighting the unpredictable nature of life, you know, the constant need to keep swimming. That's what we got to do in life. And it mirrored that ever-evolving journey we all undertake. Very well done.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like that. And you're right, this did make for a wonderful extended metaphor for the journey of life. Yeah, really amazing imagery and metaphor throughout. I like the consistency in the theme and how it really played well off of the prompt poem. I like how the first two stanzas are youth, where we're just starting to kind of find our way. We're trying to kind of to find out who we are, and we're a little, you know, lost. And then we get that conviction. We know where we're going. We know what we want life to be. And then we find out that it doesn't always go the way we think. And then in the end, he speaks on the idea of finding that wisdom of, you know what, it's not necessarily where you end up or who you become, but rather who you were during the whole journey. I really like this all the way through, but especially stamina grew beside tenacity. I swam life as food and fear. If insistence paid conviction, sunny shorelines were looming near. That really speaks in that time period where you feel almost invincible. And then the last two stanzas really speak on that unexpected turn and that wisdom that comes to you eventually. So amazing write and very well done. And what do we got next, Jody?
All right, next we have Who Is That A Walking in the Corn by Fenton Johnson, classic poem.
Yep. All right. Let me go ahead and find that and do. And here we go.
Who is that a walkin' in the corn? By Fenton Johnson. Who is that a walkin' in the corn? I have looked to east and looked to west, but nowhere could I find him who walks master's cornfield in the morning. Who is that a walkin' in the corn? Is it Joshua, the son of Nun? Or King David come to fight the giant near the cornfield in the morning? Who is that a walkin' in the corn? I have looked to east and looked to west, but nowhere could I find him who walks master's cornfield in the morning. End of poem.
And I'd like to say that I love that classic poem. It really speaks to me on, the African-American spiritualism. And I have to say a great big thank you to our very own Richard Wiseman, who was nice enough to make that recording of that poem for us. So thank you, Richard. And what do we have next, Jody?
Okay, so this is the Whose Footsteps Are Those Trampled in the Corn by Marriott Dark. Now, I'll go ahead and give that a read. Let's see. Marriott Dark, Whose Footsteps Are Those Trampled in the Corn? Whose footsteps are those trampled in the corn? I have failed to recognize the sandaled feet. Is it the very same who once trod the Galilee, now wandering among the stalks of corn? Whose footsteps are those trampled in the corn? Is it the soldier who scourged our Lord, or the centurion who once pierced his side, now wandering lost among the stalks? Whose footsteps are those trampled in the corn? Is it the Holy Mother searching for her son before she was told he had left his empty tomb? Is it she who now wanders among the stalks of corn? Whose footsteps are those trampled in the corn? Are they the hooves of the dreaded father of lies? Or St. George come to slay the dragon of our tyranny? Tell me, I beg, before the master turns his whip on me. End poem.
Great read there, Jody, and what a brilliant and powerful write by Marriott Dark. I really like Whose Footsteps Are Those Trampled in the Corn as a title, that, and that question that keeps repeating itself. The use of the word trampled, the idea that something that was supposed to once be beautiful, the idea of the love and kindness and that Christ spoke of, trampled, the idea that all people, you know, should be loved and embraced. I like the narrative of this poem and how it takes a look at both makes both a social commentary and speaks on spiritualism and its place in history. I like how it also reminds me of the poem that you oftentimes see hanging on walls, Footprints, where the one there at the end, it says, you know, why Jesus, didn't you walk with me at my most difficult times? And it was like, in those times, it was that I was carrying you. And the ending really just, I mean, wow, it does hit hard because, you know, it keeps asking the question. And then ending with, tell me, I beg, before the master turns his whip on me. It's the idea of being trapped in horrible circumstances and looking for that sense of freedom, looking for that Savior that will slay the dragon of tyranny. So Amazing right and very well done. And Jody, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought she did a great job capturing the sense of mystery and questioning, you know, exploring the footsteps in the cornfield, raising different possibilities and illusions from biblical figures to, you know, mythological symbolism. I thought that, you know, the way she repeated the central question, whose footsteps are trampled in the corn, you know, that added an intriguing and contemplative quality to the poem. Yeah, I thought she did a very good job of that. Yeah, the ending was incredible. That was a great way to end that poem.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, definitely incredible ending. Oh, and just to let you know for future reference, both Sandy G and Mary Dark are guys.
Oh, okay. Oh, thank you. I did not know that.
Yeah.
All right.
No problem. Well, you know, some names, you know, especially those all poetry monikers, you know, they can go either way. So.
I'll say I get that all the time with my name.
Yes, yeah, you really don't see too many. You know, the funny thing is I actually have a friend who, well, she's got like, I think like 9 or 10 siblings, but one of her brothers is named Jody. So, you know, I've seen it before, but yeah, it doesn't happen too often.
The men usually spell it with a Y and the girls with an I or an IE.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Yep, exactly. So, all right. Well, what do we got next?
All right, next we got Arrow Shot by Ken Smith. You want to give that a read, Pam?
Absolutely. An arrow shot cannot be recalled. A completed action, the arrowhead, a kite that can't be strung back in. If found, it can be used again until it finds its rightful target, weaving and swaying in the currents of time and opinion, itself bending against the forces, twisting, cracked, till it no longer looks the same, weathered, changed, having traveled straight as a crooked arrow. End poem. And your thoughts, Jody? Are you on mute?
I am. Sorry about that. Yeah, I thought he did a great job with that poem. You know, I thought he fit the classic poem he was writing for very well. You know, still no longer looks the same, weather changed, having traveled straight as a crooked arrow. I mean, that's a pretty powerful line. That's a great way to end that. Very well done.
It does, yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. This made for such a great extended metaphor. And I like the way his title leads into the poem. And, you know, I've heard the idea of, you know, like, I like the idea of the arrow being released as a metaphor for something you can't take back easily. Like, if you... you say something in the heat of anger. If you decide to argue over something, you know, political or whatever, you know, once you say words that are cruel, once you can't easily take it back. Or once you break somebody's trust, you can't easily get their trust back. You have to put work into it. And oftentimes, as it says, you know, it can be, if found, it can be used again. Well, a lot of things, you know, there are things out there like the arrow that you can go find it, but it's going to take work. And it's never, each time it's released, each time it has to go against the currents of time and opinion, it's going to be changed. And I really like that end line with having traveled straight as a crooked arrow. You know, you can't ask a leopard to change their spots. if someone becomes crooked, or, you know, they are crooked within the society, within the political system, you're never going to get them to straighten out. At least this is some of the stuff I read into to Ken's poem. Of course, his rites are always nicely layered, like a yummy piece of cake. So, very well done.
Yeah, that's a great comment. I was always told, if you're born a circle, you're not going to die a square, right?
Yep, there you go. There you go. Yeah, I like that.
All right. So that was that for that classic poem. So we will be on to the next classic poem.
I was thinking before we go to the next classic poem, since, you know, since Richard did the recording for the classic poem, and his isn't specifically written to a poem, it just fits with the theme, why don't we go ahead and put his poem up now?
Okay. No, that'd be fine.
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Almost got it. There we go. He is "Once We Were Hellfighters" by Richard Wiseman.
All right. And we do have a SoundCloud for that. Let me just find it. And here we go.
"Once We Were Hellfighters" by Richard Wiseman. Icy panic as I plunged index finger deep to the back of my throat. Empty coughing, never could make yourself puke. Even as a boy back in Happy Hill, how much did you tank? Still don't feel a thing, too damn much. Cold sweat fears ruining my slow inching high. Aching, nauseous as I scratch and pace the spotless men's room floor. Bellevue's TB ward, cursed floor, always sparks them pre-war memories of the first time I mopped it, and of Caleb's pre-war voice ringing mine's ear. Done a fine job here, young Missa Moses. My head shook as I muttered to the present day's disinfected tiling for a corpse. Again, I dropped to shaking kneelings. Pressed hand against the back of the bowl's Lysol seat lid. Thank God you always hated needles. My index finger to caving throat, choking, coughing, tearing up. Nothing. Might as well be needles, unless you puke it out. Needles first got you into this mess back in 18. Crawling out them rat-thick trenches near Butte to Mesnil. It was like a bee stung my leg, blood flowering from the spot, and Caleb's half-shattered face wailing. So I wailed, "Medic, you fuckers, medic!" But they shrouded him while sterilizing and bandaging me. Then they pushed that long needle deep in my ass cheek. Soon the warm, dizzy junk fog crept over till sleep. I woke in a French hospital to more needles until hooked. Zombie like one of them voodoo hexed crackers. Year drifted into year till my dreams of music, fame, and the junk-free side of Harlem faded. Until now, dying from a dope hazy swallow too big. Again, I plunged fingers to the back of my throat, ruining my high. Remember before the needles, before that self-loathing, junk-hungry, sick need, before my Caleb-voiding, death-nodding brain, before setting camp for our bonuses, before they torched our Hoovervilles, remember before them Huns gimped your leg? Johnson was nobody back then. Turned out to be bigger than Sergeant York or any of them Peckerwoods. Held off 30 Germans single-handed, got injured bad, not just gimped like me. So nobody'd hire him after. Them French meddled him the next day, should have gotten our Medal of Honor and been a national hero instead of dying penniless in 29 like a bum or a criminal, though he did commit a crime, the crime of being born black in America. Quick dreaming soldier, two fingers all the way back now, dope yellow chunks plop into the porcelain bowl, wasted. So I turn my head and the rest ruins my perfect white tile floor. Lap it clean now, because Lord knows you'll need that high, since your mind's forever stuck, haunted by 18's trench memories, though the walled calendar above the tubercular Jew's coughing head reads 1936. For us hellfighters, it's always 1918. End of poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Richard. Thank you for sharing this with us. Very relevant for tonight's topic. Thank you for the SoundCloud. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And in his AN, Richard puts, the Harlem Hellfighters were an African-American regiment that fought in France during the Great War. They were hailed as heroes, even as they faced discrimination at home. And Jody, your thoughts on Richard's write?
Oh, yeah, I thought he painted a vivid and haunting picture, you know, of a soldier's life and the struggle with addiction, the memories of war and the pursuit of that high. You know, the imagery and emotions in the poem definitely created a sense of desperation and loss. Very impactful, you know, the words he chose to use in, about the war and the addiction on an individual's life. You know, the reoccurring themes of the needles and the memories, you know, made it a very powerful and thought-provoking piece. That is very well done.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up the addiction part, because, you know, that was a real central focus of the poem, I believe, and, you know, an important part of it. And it makes me so sad, you know, and this has happened throughout history, you know, to think of soldiers, the black community that served in wars. I mean, there was even black people who served in the Civil War, in World War I, World War II, and, you know, even the Vietnam War, well, the Vietnam War, it was a conflict or whatever they call it. That was the idea. I mean, so many of the soldiers, no matter what their race or color was, came home to people who just spat on them and treated them miserably. I like the first person narrative of this write. Richard does a wonderful job of bringing forth the voice of someone who fought in this war, who saw death and ugliness and violence and went through it for their country, only to be rejected, only to be not only forgotten, but downright hated in their own in their own home, their own country, you know. And yeah, the addiction that, you know, because morphine was, you know, during the Great War and, you know, the other wars, like, you know, I bring up the Civil War again because it was, you know, morphine became a huge addiction to a lot of these soldiers who were injured in battle. But it also became a way to escape the ugliness of life. And there's some amazing, powerful lines all the way through. But I have to say that one of the standout ones to me is, though he did commit a crime, the crime of being born black in America, quick dreaming soldier, two fingers all the way back now, yellow dope chunks plop into porcelain bowl, wasted, so I turn my head and the rest ruins my perfect white tile floor. I mean, oh my goodness, the visceralness of those lines and the profound sadness really just speaks volumes. So amazing write and very well done. And now we'll go ahead and go back to that classic poem which you had posted just before, which is Your World by Georgia Douglas Johnson, which I believe was actually our most written to prompt poem. And
before we move on to your point, the great comments you was making about how they were treated when they got back home, but when they were in war, they were putting them all on the front line, and then they had to come home and deal with that. Like, that's amazing. But yeah,
I know, right? Yeah, that is, it's crazy. It absolutely is. Yeah, I'm glad you said that. Very cool. Yeah. All right, Your World by Georgia Douglas Johnson.
Your World by Georgia Douglas Johnson. Your world is as big as you make it. I know, for I used to abide in the narrowest nest in a corner, my wings pressing close to my side. But I sighted the distant horizon, where the skyline encircled the sea, and I throbbed with a burning desire to travel this immensity. I battered the cordons around me and cradled my wings on the breeze, then soared to the uttermost reaches with rapture, with power, with ease.
All right. Amazing classic poem. And what's the first poem we have inspired by that?
Okay, the first one we have is by Robert J. Tice, and it's called Scales. And you want me to give that a read?
Totally your choice. I'll go.
That's fine. I'll read it. That'd be cool. All right, Scales. The realm of ants exceeds our world. I know because I crawled with them across the lawn behind our house. We moved by inches, fast for us, when yards were miles, clover trees and pebbles rose like boulders there. I understood immensity, the immense of little things, imminence of little things. And then I was an elephant, a whale one time, then a giraffe. Our world seemed smaller through their eyes. These titans of the earth and sea, who loom and leap at larger scales and easily could trample us. I recognize the minuscule, what giants bypass cannot glimpse, and that this middle ground we tread from quarks towards atoms past the stars is something to appreciate. See, we possess the lenses now, the microscopes and telescopes to watch beyond the medium, and we've invented instruments to weigh and pace and calculate these differentials everywhere. Now Earth's the dot, the universe, blue rounded rock of river time, or something somewhere in between. It's how and when you choose to zoom, what I decrease or magnify, and where we dare to quantify. I'm sure because I've thought of God. End poem.
Great read there, Jody, and what a wonderful write by Robert J. Tice, or Tice, I apologize. I really like his imagery and metaphors. I think there's a certain intellectuality to this write, the way he combines science and philosophy. I like how this has almost a surreal vibe, almost as if somebody's going into a dreamlike state to try to understand their place in the universe. And I like the comparison, the one word title, Scales, and the comparison between, being the smallest thing in the world, one of the smallest things in the world, being one of the biggest things. The realm of ants exceeds our world. I know because I crawled with them across the lawn behind our house. That works so well both literally and metaphorically because, you know, if you think about it, I mean, can you imagine if ants and other insects were like our size? I mean, they really would dominate the earth. There's like, I don't know, billions, I have no idea how many, but I just know that there is just obviously an overwhelming amount. But it also works in the idea of being someone who has, you know, an understanding for what it's like to be at that lowest point of your life. And then he goes into, and then I was an elephant, a whale one time, then a giraffe. Our world seems smaller through their eyes. You know, I like how these lines speak on seeing the world through other people's eyes, you know, understanding of other people's and animals' perspectives. And, you know, it also, I think, asks that question, where is my place in this world? Am I something small? You know, and yes, you are compared to the vastness of the universe. And, you know, am I something big? Yes, you are compared to the minuteness of a single ant. You know, I mean, just really intelligent and powerful line, trying to justify who we are. So amazing, right, and very well done. And your thoughts, Jody?
Yeah, I thought he beautifully reflected on the perspective of scale. I mean, you go from ants to the vastness of the universe. I mean, that's definitely going from one end to the next on the spectrum. And to your point, like, if ants were our size, we'd be screwed. They're like, they can lift like 100 times their weight. But yeah, I thought the poem, you know, reminded us of the importance of tools and instruments, you know, for exploring and understanding the world around us. Thought it had captured, you know, a sense of wonder and appreciation for the middle ground we occupy. And I thought his closing reference to God, you know, had a contemplative depth to the poem as well. Very well done.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, yeah, I did like what you had to say about, you know, the idea of how we learn and grow and the depth and layers that was added to the poem. So excellent observations there. All right. What do we got next?
All right. So next we have It's a Small World by Neutron Bomb.
All right.
Yeah. You want to give that a read, Pam?
Absolutely. It'll be an honor. It's a Small World by Neutron Bomb. An ant is at a crossroad watching pedestrians stumble across white lines. Under the intense gaze of magnifying glass, my exoskeleton combusts like an insect toyed with by teenage flexing. The communal cacophony is just out of earshot, and I circle the drain. A typhoon pulls my hair by the roots to collect with sticky fat in the gutters that line suburban streets. A magpie plucks feathers from my wings, skin and follicle attached, carving new feathers with sharpened beak from patterned cardboard inches me closer toward the bitumen. There is light on the horizon, but those white lines shrink my world like concentric cigarette burns healed into scabs. I bear hidden scars laid bare neath emperor's clothing. End poem. And I am so glad that Neutron was inspired to write for this contest and this show. It's good to see something by her. And Jody, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it definitely captured the vulnerability and struggle of an ant's perspective. You know, the metaphor of shrinking white lines and hidden scars beneath The emperor's clothing adds depth and thought-provoking layers to her poem. Made it very compelling, you know, reflection on the fragility of existence that we all live with. Yeah, I thought it was very well done.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. Wonderful comment there, Jody. I'm just checking something. Okay. I was checking to see if Puddles had written for this show, and I didn't see anything by her, so I guess she didn't, so
okay.
For some reason I thought she had, but that's all right. I just wanted to make sure. But yeah, you know, Neutron has a unique voice. She comes up with imagery and metaphors that, you know, I think are kind of like ones I wish I had thought of myself. I like that this is a second poem that brings in the ant, the smallness. And to me, this speaks on the idea of feeling small and helpless, you know, and especially of reaching that point where you're ready to stretch your wings. You're ready to soar away from the smallness of life to the point that you're trapped. And the transformation that precedes, you know, as I really like, a magpie plucks feathers from my wings, skin and follicle attached, carving new feathers with sharpened beaks from patterned cardboard inches me closer towards the bitumen. I like how this speaks on the idea that oftentimes pain and destruction must happen before growth. Then the end lines, I bear hidden scars laid bare neath emperor's clothing. You know, the story of the emperor's clothes, where, you know, the emperor's new clothes, where he marched through the town naked, and the only person who had the courage to speak up and say, "But he's naked," you know, was the child. And it's that idea, you know, that we are trying to hide our pain. We are trying to hide our scars. But to those who truly are, you know, empathic, to those who truly know us, they will be laid bare. So amazing write by Neutron and very well done. And what do we got next?
All right, that's a great comment. We have A Donkey's Tweet by Jack Blue. I'll give that one a read for us. All right, A Donkey's Tweet number 7. Frozen like a foolish frog, dreaming on the snowy log. I was virtually asleep by the sea of shiny sheep when I found a firefly in the dipper of the sky. Through the naughty nights full of haughty sprites, the noble ghost of a fly, or kind of like a fairy guy, strolled down the times, twittering in tricky rhymes. No hell could frighten him, even if he knew no harm, but had his jazzy gong of a boomerang bong to humbly show the world how the gospel grimly whirled. Sailing down the silver river, a huckleberry's shadows shiver with a blue infinity of some tremendous memory. If a shabby gun sack rustles like a happy jack. End poem.
Great read, Jody. I really enjoyed this poem. You know, between his rhyme and flow and your read of it, it was just so bouncy and festive. It's like the kind of poem that makes me want to dance around a maypole. I like how the ending is a reference to him, to his all poetry named Jack Blue, but it also makes me think of the rhyme, Jack be nimble, Jack be quick, Jack jump over a candlestick. Wonderful imagery and metaphors, a great sense of surrealism. I like how this speaks to me on the idea of being truth to yourself, even as you go through the difficulties of life, and creative lines all the way through. But I have to say those last two stanzas really spoke to me, and especially the second to last. No hell could frighten him, even if he knew no him, but had his jazzy gong of a boomerang bong to humbly show the world how the gospel grimly whirled. You know, finding a gospel within yourself, finding the spirit within yourself through music and dance and self-expression. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And your thoughts, Jody?
Yeah, I can definitely sense, you know, very whimsical, you know, taking the reader on a charming journey through his imagination and the surreal landscapes. Not that creative imagery, you know, playful language. And I thought by using that, it created a sense of wonder and enchantment throughout the poem. Thought his wordplay added a delightful musical quality to the verses. Made it an enjoyable read, you know, very and evocative. It's a testament to, you know, power of imagination and storytelling. Very well done.
Absolutely. And you're right. Whimsical is a great word to describe that. Very well done. I mean, well, great comment. You can tell I've been through a habit of being very well done. Oh, and I see Puddles is going to go get some beauty rest. Thank you very much, Puddles, for hanging on the board for an hour and a half. We really appreciate you. Sweet dreams, and we'll see you later. All right. And what do we got next, Jody?
Okay, next we have, I believe it's the last one for the classic poem that we've been reading for, and it is by Bear Den 7, and it's called Flight. You want to give that a read, Pam?
I would. I would love to give that a read. Just to let you know, though, we do have one more. We have by Time Teller. So I'll go ahead and read this, and then you can, you know, grab Time Teller's poem for after this. All right.
Will do.
This is Flight by Bear Den 7, and it goes like this. Oh, yes, knowing freedom as a full 100% breath, inhaling forgiveness, true promise, seeking every definition, fully spent in every exhale, being no one as a career path in order to completely disappear, quiet innerness with calm acceptance, to choose liberty, to hear, to live, aware of hardships, pain, misunderstandings, history of information in its controlled destruction. While I was winter snow among all that were falling, all of it, yes, always yes, despite the cost, not a single step retraced, the circle journey glowing test, this constant heart and yearning of ocean depths, irresistible flight, seed, explosions, burning with promise of life. Yet, it is our belief, all of them, for I would not be who I be, for if it wasn't for reaching infinity's absolutely perfect trillion crossroads, moment to accept, a moment of each serene ecstasy, placeness of now is always a touch for my own memoir, sighing life. Remembrance given away by someone else, so I am made to carry that burning torch. Oh, yes, celebrations, even in pulsing, desperate blood, even in the cuts, even in love cries of earth's spinning celestial aloneness. Yes, always yes, as there is so little time to actually ignite our touch. So gratefulness is my lineage, which is unshackled by gravity here. I own each step I took to bury a golden watch, to trust and follow Mother's perfect life, long loving lessons. Here is always the spoken silence, my true father's exotic genetic memory remains speaking his part in the living vacuum of inherited silence. Yes, yes, forever, yes. Then all of it, in this lingering space of light and shadows, we each become a still life, only just a whisper, only an echo, end poem. And what brilliant imagery and metaphors and a powerful rite. And Jody, your thoughts?
Yeah, I have to agree. Yeah, that profound sense of freedom and self-discovery in that. Exploring the idea, embracing one's own path, even if it means becoming no one, finding beauty and celebration in both the joys of hardships of life. Imagery and metaphors created a vivid tapestry of emotions throughout, you know, and I love poetry like this where, you know, it invites you to reflect on your own path and the importance of each moment in our own life. I thought that was very well done. It just has great lines throughout. It's awesome. I mean, it goes on and on and on. It's just a pleasure to listen to that. You read that one.
Well, thank you. And that was a wonderful comment. It really does paint a tapestry of emotion. I like how he not only uses imagery and metaphor throughout, but he has certain lines and words that he either puts all in capitals or draws out to show an emphasis on that part, to show a sense of enthusiasm for the journey, for the search for freedom, and self-identity. I really think that this is so relevant nowadays, but it's relevant throughout history, because in time periods where people have been taken into captivity, into slavery, you know, the Hebrew people in biblical times taken by various nations as slaves, the black people taken into slavery, even at points there were the Irish immigrants, and even nowadays, they're just human trafficking is such a horrible sense of slavery and ownership of another person's body and mind. And, he speaks with such an intense emotion that, that wanting of liberty, that freedom to soar, no matter what the cost, no matter how painful it is, to go against the naysayers and celebrate the individuality of self. I do have to look up the word Akashic and find out what that means. Of course, that's always a pleasure to look something up. Akashic records in the religion of theosophy and the spiritual movement called anthroposophy, the Akashic records are a compendium of all universal events, thoughts, words, emotions, and intent ever to have occurred in the past, present, or future. So that is really fascinating and adds an extra layer to the poem. And I like how it speaks on the idea of wanting freedom, of passing along knowledge. And I also like the part where he says, to trust and follow Mother's perfect life, long loving lessons. The idea that we pass along these lessons from one generation to the next. An amazing write and very well done. And your thoughts, Jody?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I did a very incredible job with that. Throughout, yeah, you were talking about the Akashic Records. Yeah, that I've heard that before. When people were talking about spirituality, yeah, it's pretty interesting to think about, honestly. It suggests the existence of cosmic knowledge and experiences accessible on a higher plane of consciousness. Pretty interesting. Whether seen as metaphorical concept or a mystical reality, really. It's some mysteries of the universe I'm always curious about for sure. Yeah, that's very well done.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, truly a fascinating aspect. So very cool. All right, Jody, what do we got next?
So we do have one by Tom Teller. Apparently I wanted to read it, so I skipped it.
There you go.
So I'll post it. I'll go ahead and read that one for us. And it is, we came, we saw, we left. We moved, trading the dust of country for grit of metropolis. Tube train diesel aromas, a new ode de cologne, replacing rape seed oil, harmonized with humiliation's B.O. of poverty. Generations later, we moved from moldy, musky stench of black grime, ground into the walls of cheap politics, embedded in the crumbling, reinforced concrete, drenched by puddles of unsanitized existence in days whose horizons went far beyond unseen sunsets of countryside left behind. Nesting beneath high-rise, once docklands with metallic industrial monsters that craned wealth from boat to shore, transformed into wealthy centers of amphetamine economic growth, whose binary electronics crane wealth from shore to the world. The bed sit barely had room for a bed, with no chair. Upgraded flat filled with family, taking turns to be home or at work, so as not to cramp. Expanded like fields of corn laying roots for posterity, fixed into concrete high-rises where packaging of cheap existence was discarded by plummeting down flute chutes from our great height 20 floors up to great round bins of steel on the ground. New breeding grounds of overspilling rubbish, bacteria, rats, drunken pisses, teenage pregnancy, glue sniffing, heroin, needle sharing aids, addicted solitudes of private living in the shades of bins. Sometimes inside them. Two generations, an aspiration had become an endangered animal, marauding in bomb pits and culturally extinct honesty. We were country folk, country called. Like bird song above street clatter, chatter and bustle of pollution's progress. Country lanes drew our thoughts, minds resting on pillows as beneath black mold, we meandered our way on carts between hedgerows, picking berries and harvesting apples. A call grew in intensity, seagulls of coast, kites and kestrels of woodland, buzzards soaring high on a blue, dazzling day. Two generations was all it took before we realized. Swap grime, dust of city for pollen, nectar of countryside. End poem.
Great read there, Jody, and what a powerful and amazing write by Tom Teller. Oh, my goodness, so many thoughts going through my head. First of all, his visceral imagery that included all the senses really brought this picture to life, in this poem to life in raw and gritty detail. It made me think of, as I was talking about in the beginning of the show, the great migration, you know, the time period where a lot of Black people were moving from the South to the bigger cities, the urban areas you know, the Midwest. And it made me think of other migrations too, you know, people in the you know, 1800s coming to the United States, the Depression era, where people were traveling west looking through for jobs through the Dust Bowl of Oklahoma, you know, and the idea of, you know, that people are oftentimes pushed by outside forces within their life to seek something new. I also like how it you know, speaks on the changes that happen from one generation to the next, and the realization that, you know, the flashy promises of the big city, and the idea that, you know, the realization that what they really wanted was the soil and the air, and that the pollen and nectar of the countryside. They felt this call from nature, from the earth, to come back to farming. Really quite an amazing rite all the way through. The first part is, you know, it's such strong visceral imagery on the ugliness. And then, you know, wonderful, I mean, just amazing imagery that speaks on self-realization of dreams that need to be followed. It also made me think of, I had a teacher, you know, in junior high, who talked on the idea that, you know, when something is overly loved, when it is overly wanted, it can become destroyed. Like, you know, when too many people want to live out in the country, it no longer becomes the country. It becomes the suburban areas. I really like this all the way through, but especially two generations and aspiration had become an endangered animal, marauding in bomb pits and culturally extinct honesty. We were country folks and country called like bird song above street clatter, chatter, and bustle of pollution's progress. Wonderful lines and very well done. And your thoughts, Jody?
Yeah, I agree. I thought it, you know, did a great job of reflecting on the passage of time and the profound transformation of life from the countryside to the bustling metropolis. You know, he skillfully used sensory imagery in this one, you know, to convey the evolving experience and the challenges from, you know, generation to generation. You know, the contrast between rural and urban life, you know, touching themes of poverty and aspiration, you know, his realization of the call of the countryside for him, you know, in his heart, you know, I thought reclaiming, you know, his place there, you know, really added to the depth of the exploration of life's journey. Very well done all the way through. It's a nice ride.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And what do we got next?
All right. So next is, so that was the last one for that classic poem. And
yep.
So now we're going to A Poet to His Baby Son. And that is by James Weldon Johnson.
All right, here we go.
Tiny bit of humanity, blessed with your mother's face, and cursed with your father's mind. I say cursed with your father's mind, because you can lie so long and so quietly on your back, playing with the dimpled big toe of your left foot, and looking away, through the ceiling of the room, and beyond. Can it be that already you are thinking of being a poet? Why don't you kick and howl, and make the neighbors talk about the damned baby next door? And make up your mind forthwith to grow up and be a banker or a politician or some other sort of go-getter or whatever you decide upon. Rid yourself of these incipient thoughts about being a poet. For poets no longer are makers of songs, chanters of the gold and purple harvest, sayers of the glories of earth and sky, of the sweet pain of love and the keen joy of living, no longer dreamers of the essential dreams, and interpreters of the eternal truth. through the eternal beauty. Poets these days are unfortunate fellows, baffled in trying to say old things in a new way or new things in an old language. They talk abracadabra in an unknown tongue, each one fashioning for himself a wordy world of shadow problems, and as a self-imagined atlas, struggling under it with puny legs and arms, groaning out incoherent complaints at his load. My son, this is no time nor place for a poet. Grow up and join the big, busy crowd that scrambles for what it thinks it wants out of this old world, which is as it is and, probably, always will be. Take the advice of a father who knows, you cannot begin too young not to be a poet.
All right, another amazing classic poem. And what do we have first inspired by that?
This is par for course. That was being read, I was thinking this has got Eric written all over it, and the poem I go find is the first one is The SoundCloud by Eric Simpson. Like, perfect. it just sounded like a poem he would love to write to.
Yes, I have to agree. Absolutely.
There's that.
All right, Vespers and Ventriloquists by Eric Svensson, and we do have a SoundCloud for that. So here we go.
Vespers, Vespers and Ventriloquists, O calamities of calamities, calamus of sweet flag, bulrush, riverbeds, Walt Whitman's southern offspring of speared green grass, sang and sing the body electric, this poet still does, eclectic smatterings and scatterings beneath the southern cross constellations, tombs, terms, and ties of yesteryears still bind, rhymed core and center bind, cattle herding with Pa as little creative caddy. Michener's how wide red underneath heaven brushed blue gum trees. Brown peg in a square hole under no duress. Cattle herding wild flowers. Sweet calamus bulrush flag. Finch and pheasant snitch not of foundling fawn discoveries. Black beady-eyed otters did the cha-cha on fallen willow trunks. Dippity-doo-dive. Words just tumbled into busy beehive thrive. Retrospect no longer circumspect. Big strong Pa knew his youngest one was a poet. Four brothers followed in his farming footsteps. Seventh sibling tended flower beds with Ma. Ventriloquism, not vitriol of blue dragonflies. Sprawl of veggie garden flourished. Wondrous words still unfold. Stag amongst dew-crusted ferns. Renaissance rain man beneath purple wisteria arbor. A poet's heart can't be transplanted. Kith and kin remain akin to gods and goddesses. And you, reading this, my blessed muse, infused, diffused dark nights of the soul, broke a peace accords in bitter familial strife. Cleave unto the fiery pillar by night, sea cloud harbinger by day. For poets are God's handmaidens and handymen. Enablers, we'll still get Cain and Abel to kiss and make up. The ecstasy and the terror, two-step cha-cha, the sacred and the profane tango. Lateral sucks, but oh, the vertical is heavenly. Come, all he faith. Poets, let's chorus line all the way through them pearly gates, 'cause we prime sources, beloved renegades, ardent avatars, deconstructing dissonance into assonance. End poem.
Great read and write, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Such clever and brilliant imagery and metaphors, some great use of alliteration. I like how this speaks on his own life, but it also speaks on the idea that poets have this connection with this rest of the world, have this, you know, we're meant to spread messages throughout the world, messages of hope and peace and love, you know, or whatever words you feel called to share from your poet's heart. I really like wondrous words still unfurl, stag amongst dew-crusted ferns, renaissance rain, man beneath purple wisteria arbor. A poet's heart can't be transplanted. Kith and kin remain akin to gods and goddesses. And you reading this, my blessed muse, that idea that the place that we come from, those people that we come from, will always have a profound impact. I also really loved the imagery of, you know, the ecstasy and the terror, two-step cha-cha, the sacred and the profane tangle. You know, the idea that we express a spiritualism with the movement of dance. You know, just an amazing write and very well done. And your thoughts, Jody?
Yeah, I have to agree. I thought it was a very captivating journey through words and emotions that he put together. It's just, you know, richness of nature and family and poetic passions. And I love this stanza here. I want to read that one. Infused, diffused, dark night of the soul, broker peace, accords, and bitter, familiar strife. Cleave onto the fiery pillar by night, seek the cloud harboring by day, for poets of gods, handmaidens, and handymen. Enablers will still get Cain and Abel to kiss and make up. Oh, that was clever. That was pretty awesome. Yeah, so like everybody,
it really
a dark night. So, you know, because it makes you face your demons and all the shadow work inside you that needs to be done and healed, and got to diffuse it as well. Like, you got to get out of it, figure it out, do the work. Yeah, and then in the end, you know, it's all for the betterment of the world. Try to get people to live in harmony and love. So that's very well done. It's definitely a heartfelt tribute to the art of poetry and the power of words. Very good. Very good.
Amen to that. Well said there, Jody. All right. What do we got next?
All right. So next, we have another SoundCloud, I believe. Let's see. And we have another SoundCloud, that is by Cedar Chapman. Posted here. Why Are Lovers Born?
All right, here we go.
Why Are Lovers Born? By Cedar Chapman. Why are lovers born? Dreamers who skirt our sidewalks, bewildered and confused. Simpletons cupping sunlight in a dusty room as if they were fireflies in the night sky. Only foolish souls would sit in the dark to soak in peach candlelight, hopelessly pairing the perfect metaphor with a bottle of $10 whiskey. Lovers are drunken poets in disguise. Puppeteers of words forged together to create the illusion of a self-made man in hopes of finding an oasis behind the veil of youth. Words don't knock down walls. Dreams don't unlock shackles. Love doesn't bury the dead. They show us the sledgehammer, the bronze key, and the graveyard. But we must swing and rotate and dig. It's buried so deep in our chest that we have to crack open our rib cage and reach deep with our bare fingers to fetch them, blood and all. The world doesn't need more blood. It thirsts for pistons and transistors, riding horseless carriages with smiley-faced telegraphs. There is no place here for lovers and dreamers. No place here for us at all.
Thank you for the SoundCloud, Cedar. It is very much appreciated. And Jody, just to let you know, I would like to, after we comment on this poem, fit in the last classic poem, which is Quest by Georgia Douglas Johnson, and the last AP poet, which is Hunt by Sujatha Five. Even if we just go, okay. It's okay with you, even if we just go like a few minutes over, we'll go off air most likely when, you know, reading and commenting is done, but it will be on the recorded show. So.
Okay, sounds good. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So I really like this write by Cedar Chapman and how it speaks on the pain of feeling deeply. Amazing imagery and metaphors. And I think, you know, part of what makes poetry so beautiful is speaking from the depths of emotion. And I like the opening question, why are lovers born? You know, love is one of the most beautiful things in the world, but it is also one of the most painful. Like, it's like, you know, basically like falling from a high height and, you know, just the pain that you go through when your heart is broken. And not only in romantic relationships, but trying to, you know, have relationships with friendships and connecting with other people and exposing yourself to the possibility of being hurt. You know, especially when it comes to miscommunications or misunderstandings. Powerful right all the way through, but I especially like words don't knock down walls, dreams don't unlock shackles, love doesn't bury the dead. They show us the sledgehammer, the bronze key in the graveyard, but we must swing and rotate and dig. You know, we must work for what we want out of life. Just a really strong, visceral imagery and very well done. And your thoughts, Jody?
Yeah, I thought he did a wonderful job, you know, with the contrast of idealism of lovers with the harsh realities of life, you know, emphasizing the effort it does require to break down walls and confront the challenges of existence that we all face. You know, I thought it had a sense of longing for a world that fully appreciates the depth and emotions of dreams. Yeah, you know, we celebrate the resilience and determination of lovers and dreamers to pursue their passions despite social expectations. So, yeah, I thought you did a great job.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And what do we got next?
All right, so next we have I think this is it. Let me see. Is that it? Quest by Georgia Douglas Johnson.
All right.
Quest by Georgia Douglas Johnson. The phantom happiness I sought o'er every crag and moor. I paused at every postern gate and knocked at every door. In vain I searched the land and sea, e'en to the inmost core. The curtains of eternal night descend. My search is over.
Wonderful classic poem and such a beautiful read by our very own Naomi Sarah, one of our LNC hostesses. So thank you for that, Naomi. Much appreciated. All right, and what do we got next? Are you on mute, Jody?
I am. I'm sorry. I was trying to slow down here.
You almost missed an entire show.
Let's see. Hold on a second. All right. Of course, messed up on the last one. Let's see. Let's see. I believe this is it by the J35. The Hunt. And I'll give that a read if you want me to.
Go for it.
All right. The Hunt. Under the cloud, under the earth, silence reigns, galaxies void. Perpetual questions, discoveries made. Mankind on zenith of explorations. Invisible purity, she light of the planet. Unparalleled over the mountains, under the ocean, centuries disappear. The hunt continues. Hearts still wait for you. End point.
Great read there, Jody. And what an amazing write by Sujatha 5. Wonderful imagery and metaphors. I like how the one-word title leads into the poem. And, you know, the title makes you think, or at least me, the idea of hunting for food or hunting the enemy. But Sujatha quickly shows us with their word choicing, their imagery and their metaphors, that this is about hunting for knowledge. It's about seeking knowledge and gaining wisdom, and almost like gaining a spiritual wisdom. I really like the phrase mankind on zenith of explorations and invisible purity, she light of the planet, unparalleled over the mountains, under the ocean, centuries disappear. You know, we are searching for the connection with the cosmos. We are searching for a connection with Mother Earth, and she waits for us to discover that connection. So wonderful, layered write, and very well done. And your thoughts, Jody?
Yeah, I thought on the classic poem, Naomi did a great job reading that. This poem, she captured the essence of human curiosity and exploration, you know, imagery of searching under the cloud, under the earth, you know, the vastness of space conveyed a sense of wonder and awe. Like you said, the mention of invisible purity and the light of the planet, you know, it added a mystical element to the poem, you know, reminding us of endless mysteries yet to be uncovered in this world, you know, very thought-provoking piece. Very well done.
It really is. It really is. Absolutely. And I like that you mentioned the idea of human curiosity because, you know, isn't that part of what helps us to grow as a people, as a, you know, throughout history, some of the greatest inventions, some of the greatest discoveries were because, well, first of all, human need, but also because of human curiosity. So great observation there, Jody. And this has been an amazing show. I enjoyed hanging out with you. Amazing poetry and comments. Thank you. Thank you to Barb for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, was listening while we were on live, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Thank you to Fill My Eyes for everything she does in the background. And, you know, of course, make sure to check out the contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And, Jody, anything you'd like to say in closing?
Yeah, just incredible night of poetry. I thought it would be an exciting night, and it definitely turned out to be. So I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me. And have a wonderful
night. Absolutely. You too. Thank you.